Blog Talk Radio.
Hey family, how you doing? Thanks so much for tuning in today. You are listening to We Hear You, where we find the humanity in the headlines. I am your host, Atiba Buchanan, joining me today in full force. He is back, Mr. David Seaton, as well as my other permanent co-host, Ms. Rashida Graham Washington. Good evening, guys. How are you?
Doing well.
Glad to be back. I was actually, last Sunday, I was down in Peoria, but I did get an opportunity to hear the show. It was an action-packed, wall-to-wall,
absolutely
intellectual conversation last week. If you haven't had an opportunity or if you didn't hear it live last week, please go to the archives. Some really good conversation last week.
Yeah, absolutely. There was an amazing conversation about the current state of hip-hop. We were joined by Shay Rhymefest Smith, as well as Dr. Christopher Emden, and those guys were, again, more than qualified. It was a great show. And Rashida really showed out talking about the DJ. And
yes, she did.
I was like, okay, go ahead, Rashida. I didn't know.
I'm pretty well versed on the topic, actually, Mr. Buchanan. So, yeah.
So let me ask you, when did hip-hop save your life?
I don't know that hip-hop has ever saved my life.
Well, when did you fall in love with hip-hop, right? Wasn't that in Brown Sugar? Right.
That was in Brown Sugar. When did you fall in love with hip-hop, right? It's usually
right.
Got something to do with some boy or some girl, right?
Exactly. Well, I was confusing it with American Dad at first because Stan always says hip-hop saved his life. Anyway. Oh, God, we have fun here. So anyway, we got a lot going on. We are really ready to get into these presidential politics. Before we do that, let me remind everyone, if you could go to on Facebook to like us there, we'd greatly appreciate it. Just look up We Hear You. We'll come right up. You can follow us on Twitter at We Hear You 2, the number 2, as well. And we would appreciate your support in both of those venues. Again, every show is archived. So from the show one through now, you can go to our website at blogtalkradio.com/wehearya, and you can listen to any show we've had phenomenal guests on from week one until today. So our producer, Breon Jones, has just done excellent, excellent work, and he has highly contributed to the credibility and professionalism of the show. So please feel free to listen to those. You'll definitely be blessed. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Mr. Seaton. We're going to talk about presidential politics, and let's just update everyone as to where we are as far as delegate counts. Who's in the lead and who won what states in the most recent primaries and caucuses?
Definitely. Through today, on the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton, inclusive of the pledged delegates and the superdelegates, stands at 1,121, and Bernie Sanders stands at 481. Yesterday, you will recall, on the Democratic side, we had caucuses in both Kansas and Nebraska, where Bernie Sanders won both of those. And then we also had a primary down in Louisiana where Hillary Clinton won that handily. So although Bernie Sanders did win two states, Hillary Clinton got the most delegates yesterday. So she is in the lead handily right now. And we'll leave any speculation as to whether or not her lead can be slowed down, or her momentum can be slowed down by Bernie Sanders at this point. But as it stands right now, Hillary Clinton has a very comfortable lead on the Democratic side. Pardon me. On the Republican side, that is where the interesting facts are happening right now. So they had several states, both caucuses and primaries yesterday. And as a matter of fact, there is a primary down in Puerto Rico this evening. So we have another 20 delegates that will be apportioned and will be allocated today. However, through March 6, Donald Trump is at approximately 382, depending upon who you listen to, 382, as many as 391 delegates. So he is in the lead. However, Ted Cruz won both caucus states yesterday for the Republicans, which were in Kansas and in Maine. So right now his delegate count stands at 300. Ted Cruz had a very nice very nice data point yesterday, as he is the only Republican to date to win more than 50% in any state.
Mm.
So he is at 300. I think the final vote count actually in Kansas, he was probably 49, but he has gotten the highest percentage in any date in any state to date. Mm-hmm. And then Rubio rounds us out at 128, Kasich at 35. Here's where it gets interesting, though, for the Republicans, because if you've been following this on any news network, they're probably, you know, everybody has been prognosticating and saying Trump is definitely going to win. He's way out in front. There's no stopping his momentum. There are approximately, or there are exactly, 1,612 remaining delegates on the Republican side, and the Republicans need 1,237 delegates to lock the nomination when they get to Cleveland. I believe it's in, is it April, is it, it's in June or July?
Yeah.
When they have their convention.
Yeah.
But here's where it gets interesting. Trump, he needs 855 delegates to get to that 1,237 delegate threshold. That would mean that of the remaining delegates that are left, he would have to win 53%. So far, he's only won 39.8%. Now, you can throw in that the remaining states after today are going to be winner-take-all, but he would still have to have an appreciable increase in the states that he wins more than he has won to date. The remaining people who are going to remain in the race, whether it's Cruz, Rubio, or Kasich, or any combination of the three, they would need 756 delegates, or 46.89% of the remaining delegates, to stop Trump from getting the nomination. And then there's another 100. I know if you're doing the math with me, there's another 127 delegates out there that have been won by the candidates who have dropped out so far. Your Santorums and your Huckabees and Ben Carson, who, let me just say right there, thank God Ben Carson finally dropped out at CPAC.
Right.
I was waiting for that. Ben Carson, if you're listening, I know you're not listening, but thank you for doing the sagacious thing and dropping out of the race. So on March 15th, that is the drop-dead date that both Rubio and Kasich have said that if they don't win their respective states, that they will be dropping out. Rubio, obviously from Florida, where he is senator, there's 99 delegate votes there. And also on March 15th, Ohio will be having their primary. There are 66 delegates there. It's very, very probable that if Rubio can, well, let me say it like this, and it was covered actually on Chuck Todd on Meet the Press today. If Rubio wins the 99 delegates in Florida, and Kasich pulls out those 66 delegates in Ohio, and there's some polling showing Kasich leading, that Donald Trump would have to win 67% of the remaining delegates to secure the nomination. And even if he loses one of those states, it gets increasingly more difficult for Trump to get the Republican nomination. It's looking more and more like, to me, and I've been saying this for a while, but it looks like to me on the Republican side, we're going to have a brokered convention.
So basically, although Trump has been leading in the polls and he's been winning, obviously, the most states, because he has been unable to break that 35-39% threshold, that has kept him then from being able to basically run away with it.
Exactly. He's had a plurality of votes, but he has not had any state where he has won over 50%.
Right.
And that's going to be his biggest impasse. And running away with the nomination. It's just really, really being sad, though, to watch how the media has characterized this race on the Republican side, like Trump is the presumptive nominee, and nothing could be further from the case.
Absolutely.
If you look at the various states and the dates that are coming up, it's going to become increasingly difficult, especially if Cruz is able to carry this momentum that he got on quote-unquote Super Saturday. It's going to be increasingly difficult for Trump to run away and hit that 1237 threshold to secure the nomination.
You want to
so
get in here, Rashida?
Absolutely. I have a question for you all to ponder. One of the things that Trump has been touting since the very, very early stages of this process is that he is not a politician. He's never held a political office, and that he's a businessman. And so now here we are at this sort of intersection where he needs these delegates and superdelegates in order to win the primaries. How do you think him not having a political background or having ever held an office will affect his ability to acquisition these the votes he needs from the to acquire these delegates and superdelegates.
Well, as far as the electorate is concerned, and if you look at obviously on both sides, we have caucuses and we have primaries. With the exception of Texas and Oklahoma, every other state that Ted Cruz has won has been a caucus, if I'm remembering correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the interesting thing about your question, and here's the interesting thing when you talk about the primaries as opposed to the caucuses. In the primary states, people are able to show up to the poll, they're able to walk behind a curtain and close that curtain and vote for whomever they want to vote for, and it's completely anonymous. Nobody knows who they're voting for. But in the caucus states, where someone is able to challenge you, when you say out of your mouth in a caucus state, I want to vote for Donald Trump, in every caucus state, people have been able to pull those votes away from Trump,
right,
and get that support to one of the other candidates. So Donald Trump does have the advantage in the primary states, where people are able to just make a visceral, reflexive vote for Donald Trump. And I would assume by extension, making that vote completely emotionally. But I think it's going to become increasingly hard, because in the last debate, they were kind of cracking away or chipping away at the presentation that is Donald Trump, whether we're talking about Donald Trump University, whether we're talking about Donald Trump Steaks or Donald Trump Vodka or Donald Trump Mortgage. And they're starting to chip away at this perception that the American people have. And he'll maintain his core of support. But going forward, the Republican establishment is going all in to stop Trump from hitting that 1237 threshold. And I think it's only going to get harder. A lot of people have used March 15th as a date of demarcation, but I think it's going to go far past March 15th.
I think we can determine this as well. Then, let's assume that they are able to prevent him from getting the 1237. The other problem to that is that no one else is likely to get it either.
That's why the brokered convention is almost inevitable at this point.
Right. So it's not like Ted Cruz is likely to get the 1237. No one is.
No.
So like you said, you're looking at a brokered convention. I'm glad that you mentioned that though, Dave. As far as his rallies. Some of the commentary in the last debate, I should say. I'd like to go ahead and play a little bit of sound and then get you guys' opinion on this.
Well, I also happen to call him a lightweight, okay, and I have said that, so I would like to take that back. He's really not that much of a lightweight. And I have to say this, he hit my hands. Nobody has ever hit my hands. I've never heard of this one. Look at those hands. Are they small hands? And he referred to my hands. If they're small, something else must be small. I guarantee you there's no problem. I guarantee. All right. Okay. Moving on.
Okay. After my head got done exploding, after hearing that, and even replaying it just now, I love how he opened up with a backhanded compliment.
Mm-hmm.
He's not that much of a lightweight, but he's still a lightweight. He's just not as much of a lightweight as I originally reported. So, again, even in trying to backtrack his comments on Marco Rubio, he still is sticking with a jab. But never in the history, at least recent history of presidential politics, have I ever seen anything like what we just heard. When you look at income inequality, you look at global warming, you look at police brutality, you look at the trade agreements that we have in this country, you look at all the you look at dirty water, landfill water. Matter of fact, they were in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the things that he didn't talk about, for him to go out of his way to bring this up is so far beneath the office, or even the potential to hold the office. And again, it just blows my mind that when you think about had President Obama made any statement like this, the backlash that would have followed.
We would love to hear your comments on our conversation about politics, the Republican Party or the Democratic Party, no matter where you fall on that side of the issue, please give us a call at 657-383-0193. That is 657-383-0193. Rashida, as the only female on the radio show right now, I would love to hear your reaction to Donald Trump and his categorization of his endowment based on his hands.
I don't think I have a remark that is based out of my womanness or femininity. I would, though, concur with what Atiba shared about the reality, which is that there are so many more insightful, pertinent, necessary conversations that we need to be having in this country. To be candid, I feel like Donald Trump is already getting enough airplay, so I'm cautious to give him much more of my time and attention. Whether I be a woman or otherwise, I just think, I was talking to my husband about it earlier. In general, what Donald Trump knows how to do is participate in reality TV. And so, in a lot of ways, he has turned this whole process into a reality television show, to which I'm careful not to give him much more than he's due.
Here's the larger question, though, and I think this is what a lot of people, I think a lot of people have given Donald Trump a lot of credit for how he has turned this political season on its head. But is his genius that he is impolitic and that he's a carnival barker and that he's pedestrian and juvenile, or is his political genius that he has recognized that there is a sample of the Republican voters out there that they are pedestrian and and impolitic, and he's just playing to that sample of the Republican voters?
I think both can be right. Right, I don't know that it's an either or situation. I think that you're right on both accounts. We've seen all of the memes go around about the Trump supporters that can't spell Trump, T-R-M-U-P.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that he's even said out loud, "I love the uneducated,"
mm-hmm.
and that there was literally no backlash. If anything, mm-hmm. his poll numbers went up, and the uneducated. People were happy to claim themselves as uneducated and then say that they further support him. He has been unlike anything I've ever seen. As much as people reminds them of, was it George Wallace?
Right.
As much as they say that, again, I don't think that we've ever seen anything like this, certainly not in the past 40 years. So week by week, we try and predict when he's going to fall off, and I think it's clear that it is, at least for 40% of the electorate, he will never fall off, regardless of what he says, as long as he agrees to build that wall.
And that's the other interesting thing to me, is that a lot of people have said, a lot of people on the right have said that they support Donald Trump because he's been so successful in business and because he came out and said that his net worth is $10 billion. And he always goes on and says, how I built this great, big, successful company, and because I have built this successful company, I can therefore transfer these skills and this skill set to being president. But again, that falls flat on its face for anyone who's looking at it for at least a little bit intellectually, because he inherited the wealth that he started with to build his company. And we can and you can go back and find out where that wealth came from and whether it was legal or illegal or what have you. But then on top of that, to say that because someone built a $10 billion company, that by extension they are therefore qualified to manage a $14 trillion economy, that you can't just walk into the White House and just say you're fired.
You don't have that autonomy.
That's what's so infuriating to me. When I listen to people that are watching, that are listening to Trump, and they cite, I was watching actually one of the videos yesterday. There are two videos on YouTube that you get a chance to watch. They're both out of Florida. Please check them out. But his Orlando, Florida appearance, where he had everybody raise their right hand and pledge
right.
to support him. There's someone standing on the stage to his right who had his dog with him. I don't know how that happened. But the guy stopped and bent down to pick up the dog's right paw so that the dog could presumably, I guess, make the pledge
right.
to vote for Trump. And then there was
yeah,
another.
Yeah, I saw that
another,
video. I saw that
yeah,
video from Davey.
There was another one where they were questioning people. There was one person who was a Hillary supporter, one person that was a Trump supporter, and one person that was, I believe, a Rubio supporter. And when he asked the guy, it was just an ordinary-looking white guy down in Florida, and he asked this guy, why are you supporting Trump? He said, well, Trump, he knows how to bring jobs. I mean, he's been down there on the construction sites, and he's been, what are you talking about? Donald Trump is not at a construction site wearing a hard hat, bringing his lunch in a lunch pail, catcalling at women as they walk past.
Interviewing people.
Right.
Interviewing foremen and
right. I mean, this is how disconnected Trump supporters are. To even think that I can't imagine what activity Trump could have possibly involved himself in the last 20 years where he got his hands dirty,
right.
let alone Trump being down at a construction site. But this is the lies that people have to tell themselves, because what they're doing is so counterintuitive and so distant from reality that
yes.
you're picturing Donald Trump at a construction site.
Well, here's another disconnection from reality I'd like to talk about that to me is it goes along with this, but it certainly is a bigger problem. I've seen a lot of establishment Republicans the past few days trying to disassociate themselves, not just from what Trump is saying and the things that he's doing, but from the culpability that they have in helping to create him.
Exactly.
And that is the disconnect that is so troubling for me. So now, after we've had 7 years of complete and utter disrespect of the president, our first black president, after we've had 7 years of obstruction, 7 years of near treason, and that's not an exaggeration. When you talk about Netanyahu addressing Congress behind the president's back, when you talk about the letter to Iran, and you talk about them trying to get them to hold Iran to hold hostages until those things are border on treason. So when you talk about the birther movement, you know, the list goes on and
a-la
on.
A la Donald Trump.
Right. A la Donald Trump. However, but that was still a strain through the Tea Party that swept through there, through the Republican Party, and now they're saying that they don't have anything to do with that, that they didn't help foster the environment for Trump to be successful. And my thought on that is, it's not that they have a problem with what Trump espouses, is that they have a problem with him saying it out loud.
Maybe we're crazy. If you're out there and you're listening and you have an opinion about Trump one way or the other, Hillary Clinton one way or the other, give us a call at 657-383-0193. We want to have you part of this conversation. Go ahead, Rashida.
Yeah, you know, I want to just highlight the fact that there has been enough mudslinging to last us a lifetime in this Republican process. And in spite of it all, small hands, little Marco, who needs to be quiet and learn how to breathe, and all of that, when the question was asked in the debate last week, would you support the Republican candidate if it was Donald Trump? All three of the other candidates said that they would. So I'm really interested in hearing you all's take and perception on how we could go from night to day. I mean, literally within minutes of the mudslinging and not even just the derogatory name calling. All that schoolboy playground behavior set aside. Strictly on policy, if this is a person whose policies could not be more polarly opposite than mine, then how can I, within 5 minutes of saying so, also say that I will vote for that person to become the president of the United States? What is your take on that?
Because the other individuals who are running other than Trump are feckless, spineless hounds.
That's the only way, right, David?
But here's the thing. They are so afraid of being attacked by Trump that I don't think that either Kasich or Rubio or Cruz were able in real time to make the calculation that if they had stood up on principle at the end of that, when being asked that question at the end of the last debate and said to the American people, I care too much about this, whether you agree with Republican orthodoxy and ideology, which I don't, but if they had stood up and said, I care too much about this country, I care too much about you, the American people, that I cannot in good conscience, I cannot support and I will not support Donald Trump if he is the Republican nominee, anyone who had the courage to say that would be sailing in the polls right now, but none of them have the courage of their convictions, and that alone is reason enough not to support the Republican Party, because when it comes down to when the rubber meets the road, the Republicans are nothing but talk.
Yeah.
But there's much to say after that.
I don't feel like he's passionate enough about this topic, Atiba. I feel like he's doing things that make David more passionate.
He gives me a little moxie about himself, right? Get a little fire in his belly or something.
That's right.
I'm sorry. This is a topic that I am extremely passionate about. Atiba has known me. He and I have known each other for 35 years,
mm-hmm.
and he knows there's the one thing that I hate above anything else is hypocrisy. I can take it.
Yeah.
I would rather someone just say what they think and be wrong than to be a hypocrite. I just can't stomach that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk about some things I can't stomach. We're going to transition a bit, but still, we're still here in presidential politics. Again, we talk about the Trump phenomenon and the environment that has been a part of his rallies. And I'm just growing more and more concerned. At first, it was kind of fascinating, even interesting, kind of funny and sad at the same time. You know how you kind of laugh to keep from crying? But it's not funny anymore. It's not funny anymore. So I got a list of things here that kind of shows the progression of how his rallies have devolved, mm-hmm. I think is the right word.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, Elizabeth May Davidson, who worked for Trump, campaign organizer, she's suing him for sex discrimination. This was out of Davenport, Iowa. There's a young woman, 26 years old, who indicated she was not able to speak and that not just her, but all of the females were being paid less than the males were for the same job. So here's a candidate trying to tell us about jobs and how he loves women and he respects women. And even in stating that, he kind of disrespects them. And just the way that he talks about them in such a belittling, demeaning way.
No one's going to take care of women more than Trump.
Right. I mean, he's the only person that was worse than Romney's binders full of women.
I forgot about the binder.
Right. He's got binders. but moving on, you move on to Ronald Sanchez, who went to a Trump rally and he was spit upon just for basically being a Hispanic at a Trump rally. You move on from that, you have a Muslim woman in a hijab ejected for silently protesting out of Rock Hill, South Carolina. Moving on, you have 30 black students ejected recently. This was this week. For watching while black is basically what I call it. They were students of the school that he was speaking at. They wanted to watch and they were asked by security to leave, although they weren't protesting, not silently or in any other way. There weren't signs with them. There was nothing about them that would have caused them to be ejected from what we can ascertain, other than the fact that they were black and they had crossed whatever threshold that people are comfortable, you know, with the number of black people that they're comfortable with being together in a group. And then you got the black woman assaulted and pushed earlier this week. Her name is Shia. I can't say it. How do you say that last name?
Nguana.
That's great. Thank you. That's why he's here. But unfortunately, she had to be pushed and cursed and just belittled. Again, it was very reminiscent of the pictures from the civil rights movement when they were trying to deal with integration. And, you know, black people being yelled at and cursed and they had to bring National Guard just because you were trying to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
And again, those images, the similarity between the two was really just heartbreaking. And then you have out of that situation, a future Marine, a guy had kind of pre-enlisted, Joseph Pryor, had proudly put up his picture on his Facebook wall showing him yelling at the young woman, no telling what he was saying. And fortunately, there's some justice in this world. He's been now denied entry into the military. And then we had a photographer who was choke slammed. And I don't know if you guys saw that.
I did.
I mean, he was tossed up. He was choke slammed for trying to get, you know, do his job. And Donald Trump, and again, people think that's not related to Donald Trump, but here's the same guy that just talked about suing the press and getting rid of free speech of the press. And now we have photographers at his rallies getting tossed up. So people
and
trying
to Breitbart site on the Breitbart site. It's important to stick a pin here on the Breitbart site. And when you look at the video, the Secret Service agent grabs this guy and choke slams him to the ground. When the guy gets up, he says, you can see that he's saying to the Secret Service agent, "How dare you? You choked me." And he then puts his hand around the Secret Service's agent to say, "This is what you did to me."
Yes.
But Breitbart, they took that still frame from that video of this photographer putting his hand around the Secret Service agent's neck, showing him what he did, and then they ran the story that liberal photographer tries to attack their Secret Service agent.
What is a liberal photographer, first of all?
Well, I think what is probably the most telling is that all of these folks were unwelcome, and yet the dog who was taking the oath was completely allowed to be present. And if that doesn't speak volumes about, you know, the agenda of these campaigns and the agenda of Donald Trump, I don't know what does.
Who brings a dog to a political rally?
And the dog was welcome. This was a candidate.
Right.
The dog was
on
allowed
stage.
To stay.
On stage, behind the candidate.
Right. Put the dog here. Somebody had to say that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. You know what look really good? Hey, you with the dog.
Right. I mean.
Yeah.
Incredible. And again, and all that, once again, he has not spouted a single policy position. You know, as the young lady was being pushed around, he was talking about repealing Obamacare, and he said, "We're going to replace it with something that's going to be cheaper and more effective." And that's as far as it gets.
We're going to take the lines from around the states.
Right.
Let me just say right there to anybody who is listening, and again, please give us a call. We'd love to have you participate in this conversation. But the two things Republicans always say is that they are going to allow insurance companies to sell insurance across state lines, and they're going to allow people to have health savings accounts. Here's what's wrong with those two things.
Huh.
Blue Cross Blue Shield there's Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois, of Indiana, of Michigan.
Right.
All 50 states have a Blue Cross Blue Shield company within that state because you can't sell insurance across state lines. So if you go to Blue Cross Blue Shield and you say, "Hey, you no longer have to have these 50 companies because Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois can sell to residents of Wisconsin or sell to residents of Indiana." What's going to happen, do you think? Blue Cross is then going to have one nationwide company and not 50 individual companies, and every insurance company is going to do the same. So now you're going to have a smaller market because you're getting rid of 50 individual companies. You're just making one nationwide company.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not going to increase competition. That's going to make it. That's going to create less competition because every insurance company is going to create one nationwide company. And with the health savings accounts, or what Ben Carson was calling them, I forget what he was calling them. You know what? Forget it. He's not relevant anymore. I promise never say his name again. But if you can't afford to pay your premium to Blue Cross Blue Shield, then what makes you think you have enough money to put into a health savings account so
right.
that when you get sick, you've got money in the bank to pay the bill or pay the premium?
Absolutely.
The whole reason that you don't have a health savings account is because you can't afford the premium. I just wanted to say that because anybody out there listening who's leaning toward the Republican ideology on health care, they're lying to you and it doesn't work.
Well, since we brought up healthcare, right, we had this young man come out today to introduce the president of Milwaukee, and he had some very poignant things to say. Let's take a listen to that and then comment.
I have never voted for President Obama, ever. I am a Republican who cursed his name, who falsely accused him, and someone who zealously worked to ensure that he would never be my president. I was diagnosed with a serious autoimmune disease. Now labeled with a pre-existing condition, I am disqualified from any and all health insurance options. Literally a dead man walking. But then this guy signs this bill. And now I have access to health insurance and I receive the care that I so desperately need. I can now say I had a serious autoimmune disease. And to the Republicans who wish to repeal the Affordable Care Act, I plead with you to reconsider. Swallow your pride, as I am doing right now, in front of what I assume are many Democrats, and do what is right. Do what is right for the people.
It wasn't about Democrats or Republicans. It was about our values as Americans and making sure.
So, let me give you my initial reaction real quick. I was just blown away. And the other thing I was blown away by is that it took this long.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We've had Obamacare now for 4 years, 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. So I'm really stunned that he's the first person, because this, I am sure there are hundreds, if not thousands of people across this country that were Republican that were like him. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm just stunned that it took so long for it to come out. But I am glad that he did come out to say this, because, again, this is what we're about here, humanity in the headlines. You can talk about repealing Obamacare, as Ted Cruz like to say, repealing every single word of Obamacare, which if I hear him say it one more time. But at the end of the day, this is helping people. He had a pre-existing condition. I have a pre-existing condition. So I know what it's like to not be able to get coverage because of that. This saved his life. He would not be here today to complain about the president if it wasn't for Obamacare. And I just really take my hat off to this young man for being able to say that in a national setting.
Rashida?
Yeah, I'm here. I definitely have some mixed feelings about this. I think it really speaks to how we place value on life in this country, because he's not the first person who has come forward and said, I don't know, I didn't know how Obamacare was going to help me, or I didn't realize how valuable it was until I needed it, and then I used it, and it saved my life. He happens to be the first white male Republican who is saying this truth. And so the reality is that the fact that now it is made national news, you know, black folks have been saying, I didn't know what Obamacare was going to do. And then I, you know, got sick and realized how much it blessed me. And, oh, my gosh, I just love it. It's amazing. It's awesome. It's wonderful. We've been saying that for years, right? But now that we have this dominant culture male Republican who can co-sign the fact that it has saved his life, now all of a sudden Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act has value and validity and worth. And so that actually makes me disgusted. Like, it annoys me, and it really does underscore the way that we place value on life in this country. That guy's life was not the first life that was saved by the presence of Obamacare. It's just, you know.
Right.
And so it's par for the course in terms of how we define what is significant or important in this country.
It's kind of, and you almost said it, and I don't know if you were thinking to say it. So if you were thinking to say it, and you were just trying to hold back, I'll say it. I don't care. I'll say it. But it's another form of subtle white privilege. It's like Obamacare doesn't get the final sign off until it's a white male that says, no, it's cool.
Right.
You know, anybody else could have said it saved their lives. But to your point, because the life of an African American or a Latino or an Asian or a minority, because the worth of their life is less from jump, than a white male offering affirmation of the worth of the ACA by his life being saved. Is now everybody can get, now we can all say, well, I guess they were telling the truth then.
Right.
Yeah.
It's saved,
yeah.
It must be good.
Yeah. Yeah, and it really speaks to the fact that, I don't know, the communications team or whoever was responsible for foisting this guy up here to make these proclamations, you know, somebody either believes that his life is more valuable and that's why they had him make the speech, or they had to play the game in order to be able to continue to underscore why it's important for us to have Obamacare. You know, either way, it makes me nauseous. So I'm glad you called my name, because I was thinking maybe I'm going to talk about this one. And then David called me. The comment, but it gets under, like, hypocrisy gets under your skin, David. The devaluation of the quality of life of certain people under the quality of life of others, that drives me nuts. And so I wanted to push them off the platform.
in the political environment that we have right now, where you have charlatans like Donald Trump, who will say and do anything, and we know from the start that he's disingenuous, it's incumbent that we go ahead and experience that moment of discomfort by being 100% candid when we know what it is. And in the situation of a white Republican male being brought in front of people at a Democratic event to try and lend some credence or lend some legitimacy to the ACA, and the only reason that you can finally lend some legitimacy to it is because it is a white male Republican. That's something that all of us need to take a look at.
And I would say I want him to go now to the Republican National Convention and make that same proclamation. I mean, he was in good company, you know, like you said, in a sea of Democrats, I'm going to make this proclamation. I want you to go find yourself a sea of Republicans and make the same proclamation. After all, it saved your life. So if you really want to, like, put some skin in the game, go and talk to the people who need to hear the messaging, you know.
Well, I think he'd be completely willing to do it. The problem is they wouldn't let him at the door.
Maybe if he brought a dog.
Right. They would show him where the lady with the hijab was and the 30 black students. You can come right over there with all them.
That's right. Get over there with the rest.
And we'll let you know when you can come in. let's transition a bit.
You have to laugh to keep from crying, right?
Right. So let's transition a bit to the Democrats. We haven't talked much at all about Hillary and Bernie. We still got a pretty competitive race, although, you know, Hillary's clearly in the lead. Don't get me wrong, but it's not a blowout. It's not a blowout. My concern for Bernie, though, is this. He's had absolutely zero traction with black people. The two states that he won yesterday were, you know, upwards of 85% white.
Mm-hmm.
I think one state was even higher. And the state that he lost, it's more diverse. Again, he lost the black vote. He lost the vote, period. But he lost the black vote just handily.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so funny because when you look at who has a better record of dealing with civil rights, even, you know, whether it's 40 years ago or today, Bernie Sanders has a better record, clearly a better quantifiable record. So I just do not understand the degree of loyalty that we have with Hillary Clinton. I don't hate the woman or anything like that, just that I really do not understand the loyalty to the degree that it goes. So maybe somebody can speak to that.
I think that in the African-American voting electorate, that there is always a percentage of suspicion that we have for whomever we vote for. I think that, and because there is that suspicion based on the history that African-Americans have experienced in this country, we gravitate, not monolithically or not as a group, but we are predisposed to gravitate toward what's familiar.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that Hillary Clinton has been painted and tainted in this election with the sins of Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
And on top of that, I think that there is when you talk about Bernie Sanders and him talking about, I think that he has done himself a disservice by saying that under his presidency that we would have free education and free health care. Because it's not free. It is not free. Everyone's taxes would have to go up. On the low end, it might go up 2%. On the high end, it would go up much higher. But everyone would have to make a contribution to the pool so that the government could then afford to provide a government-subsidized health care and a government-subsidized education for everyone who wishes to go. I think that, again, when the average African-American hears free education and free health care, I think that makes their antennae go up and they start to get a little bit suspicious and think, nothing's free. I think it's been bad messaging on the part of Bernie Sanders. And the Republican Party has been able to parse his message as European and foreign, and you know what made America great is the free market system, and we don't want to blah 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 blah. And then the people on the left, again, he's so far left that, and I'm not making a qualitative judgment about being left or far left, but he's so far left that the average individual, I think, who is on that end of the ideological spectrum, some of what he's proposing is so foreign that it's difficult to grasp it as being even politically achievable, especially in as partisan a political environment we are in today.
Rashida, who do you expect to win?
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry, go ahead. No, go ahead.
I mean, I concur with much of what David has shared. What I would add to the familiarity component is that before there was a Barack Obama, Black folks loved Bill Clinton. Before we knew many of the byproducts that would come from a lot of the work he did and how it would backfire in our communities, we were busy loving Bill, right?
Mm-hmm.
We said, Bill Clinton is the closest we're ever going to get to having a Black president. I remember these comments in our community.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got Obama, and he became the new love in some regard. And the Black community is certainly no monolith, so I want to underscore that. And not be too, not overgeneralized significantly. But that said, I think that the other thing that, so David talked about how Bernie's messaging about free, free, free is hurting us. You know, we learn from being little kids in the Black community, ain't nothing free, nothing comes free, right? And so the flip side of that is that Hillary's messaging is actually helping her tremendously. Because she's saying, remember that president that you just love, 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 President Obama? I am going to do the work of keeping in place much of the work he's already done. I'm going to come in and carry that further. You know, I don't want to repeal anything that he's already created. And then she's been able to name and provide sound bites for things that Bernie has said that are anti-Obama. So she actually ends up appearing to be more pro the one the Black community tends to love than Bernie Sanders ever could be as a result of the way that she's spinning her messaging. And so when we hear she's going to carry out what Obama started, you know, that's something that I think in a lot of ways the Black community can get behind. What I would love to see the Black community do, though, is start to juxtapose that messaging with the actual behaviors we've seen from Hillary Clinton on the campaign trail over the last month and a half.
Right. I mean, ideologically, it would, and again, not making a qualitative statement about Bernie Sanders and what he espouses, but ideologically, if we went from supply side to democratic socialism, that is within one election, that is almost unfathomable, the amount of damage it would do socially to the mindset of this country. I just don't believe that we'd be able to make that transition in one election.
Mm-hmm. So let's do this. Rashid, if you could just give us your prediction on both the Republican and Democratic side.
I'll tell you, I'm going to give you my prediction, even though my prediction makes me sad. because I would love to see Bernie Sanders as president, recognizing that he will be a bull in the china shop. But at this point, what do we really have to lose?
Right.
So that's who I'd want. But what I suspect will happen is that, you know, Hillary Clinton will get the nomination just because of, honestly, for many of the reasons that David and I just talked about, and also because she is a woman, and women are actually having this stream of consciousness. Women are saying, I want a woman, but I don't want a woman that bad. I'll wait for the right woman to vote for a woman. And then they wake up the next morning and they say, wait a minute, maybe that's this country brainwashing me. I've been so miseducated that I'm being anti-woman when I should be pro-woman. And then they flip right back within 48 hours of themselves and say, I'm going to vote for her. For those two reasons, the ones that David has articulated about the black community and what I'm articulating now about women, I think she will get the nomination. I believe that I'm in line with what David's saying, that this whole process with the Republicans is going to end up in a debunked fiasco. And someone will be selected on their behalf. And I think that'll just piss a bunch of people off enough for Hillary to get the nomination, the presidency.
So much for democracy.
Right, so much for it, right?
Right. So joining us now is a good friend of the show, Mr. Thomas Tresser. He is an educator. He is an activist. And he can talk to us about all things Chicago. He's actually going to start coming on monthly, the first Sunday of each month, to give us an update on the Chicago budget crisis and talk about different aspects of that. Mr. Tresser, how are you this evening?
Hey, welcome, everybody. Thanks for bringing me on. We hear you.
Absolutely. We are so glad to have you. For anyone that's hearing him for the first time, you're certainly in for a treat. He has joined us on our podcast before, and he was on with us when we were live on WCPT on the Wayne Besson Show back on February the 16th. You can actually go to chicagosprogressivetalk.com and hear the archive of that show as well. So all of the shows that he's been on, you're certainly welcome to hear. What do you have for us today, Mr. Tresser?
Well, guys, so in the last few days, say a week or so, we've had at least three or four different protests in the city of Chicago, including in the city hall chambers itself, around budget items relating to our schools. So the Board of Education just a few days ago issued a 1.6% pay cut for the CTU, and also three mandatory furlough days to be happening in the new school year, all but guaranteeing a walkout on April 1st, you know, that the teachers' union is not going to put up for this. Mm-hmm. And the teachers' union themselves, along with the Raise Your Hand Coalition, which is a group of parents, a group of progressive aldermen, and a group of housing activists from Uptown, have all had separate protests in City Hall, in Uptown, across the bridges, and in the public spaces, all saying the same thing. Mayor Emanuel, release the surplus funds from the tax increment finance piggy bank. So in my prior work and other comments and times I've been on your show, I've talked about TIFs and the fact that there was $1.4 billion of property taxes sitting in the TIF accounts at the beginning of 2015. So all this has been recognized, and now it's part of our civic conversation. So we're at this place where we simply do not believe the mayor and his budget director when they tell us about how things are financially. So that would be my first, you know, point to our listeners, is that we really can't trust, I hate to say it, the budget pronouncements of the mayor and his top people. We're going to need a forensic audit, you know, and by that I mean – you know, getting the FBI in here with the experts who can find mob money, you know, those kinds of, you know, people who can, you know, really look at how records have been doctored and look through computer files and trace accounts and just lay it out for us. Because look what has happened just in the last, say, year. Going backwards in time, we've just seen that the Metropolitan Pier and Exposition Authority is investing $650 million in a new hotel and the arena down by the convention center. So this is just coming out. So we're in bed with Citibank for a ruinous loan for that project and using TIF money for it to boot, $54 million. We had Barbara Bird Bennett being arrested. This is the woman who's the head of the schools being arrested for $20 million, at least that we know of, kickbacks. We've had police shootings gone amok with cover-ups at the highest level, leading to millions, not millions, but hundreds of millions of dollars of legal fees and payouts, not to mention the scarred lives and ruined lives of our young people who have been slain and their families crushed. These kinds of things are just piling up, leading us to one conclusion. We simply do not know the true state of Chicago's finances.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're doing over here at the TIF Illumination Project to try to bring some light to all this is to publish a book called Chicago is Not Broke, Funding the City We Deserve. You can get the details at wearenotbroke.us. And it's a fundraising campaign to publish this book. We have the authors all lined up. They're experts that probably many of your listeners would recognize. So that's what we're trying to do. And hopefully over the next little while, as we talk to one another, we can go deeper into the subject and, you know, sort of unfold this story in more detail.
That's fascinating. Thomas Tresser, this is David Seaton. Thank you for coming on the show today. Here's my question for you. If the funds are there in the what you call TIF accounts, and there are hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, that are off book in the city of Chicago, then obviously there is funding there to revitalize the city for going into the city and build and putting up infrastructure projects and hiring people and bringing jobs to Chicago. So my question is, because we're talking about a multi-generational thing going back all the way to Daley and before Daley. But is this an institutional issue where the aldermen and the apparatus of the city of Chicago is so bureaucratic that it just is not nimble enough to address the needs of a 21st century city like Chicago, or is it just that these people just don't care and they're just pocketing the money? It seems like that's an obvious question, but I just have a hard time believing that the mayor is sitting on billions of dollars that could revitalize the city. He refuses to spend.
You mean you're incredulous that the millionaire investment banker autocrat Rahm Emanuel doesn't have the best interests of his poor black citizens at heart? And the people that live in the distressed part of the city, that he is turning a cold shoulder to them? Oh, say it isn't so. Well, this has been the policy of the city of Chicago for 75 years. I mean, you know, Daley the First built an expressway to wall off the black community. And I think we've seen redlining and predatory lending, blockbusting, And now TIFs have been a plague upon our poor communities, and unfortunately most of them are communities of color and communities with African Americans in them. They have been taking this for generations. They've been robbed, ripped off, scarred, and scared away, and this is no different. So, I don't think this is a matter of being clumsy and just slow to react. This is by design, callous, crooked as the day is long. And I hate to say that some of our leaders are evil, but I think we have a kind of a terrible equation in modern American politics, not just in Chicago, but I say it's evil leaders and either stupid or uninformed or lazy people. So something has to change. Either we have to generate better leaders, or we have to educate and energize our people to reject those leaders.
Absolutely. Well, we're about out of time. We thank you, Mr. Tressa, for coming on, and we look forward to first Sunday in April when you're back on. And I hope our listeners greatly appreciated what you had to offer. Thanks for listening to We Hear You, where we find the humanity in the headlines, and we'll be back next week with another awesome show. Thanks again, Mr. Tressa. We appreciate you today.
Thanks. www.wearenotbroke.org.
You got it. Thanks so much, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Hold on.